When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Hi, this is Steve Roost, and you're listening to Health Tech Hour on UK Health Radio. Each week, we give you the best news, views, and interviews from the health technology world. From CEOs and founders to entrepreneurs and clinicians, the companies and people that are shaping the future face of healthcare. All on the world's number one talk health radio. Hello and welcome to this week's Health Tech Hour with me, Steve Roost. Each week we bring you the best news, views and interviews with the leaders, clinicians, CEOs and founders that are changing the face of healthcare in the UK and beyond. As many of you will know, I am a CEO and founder of a health tech venture myself called PocDoc. PocDoc's mission is to prevent cardiometabolic and renal diseases from overwhelming our healthcare systems. And we do this through our innovative technology platform that allows anybody to give themselves a test for their cardiovascular health using our Healthy Heart Check. In 10 minutes, you can do the equivalent of the NHS Health Check at home or in a pharmacy or in your community. If you'd like any more information or even to get a test, please go to pocdoc.co. So that's pocdoc.co. I've misread my script. Thank you as ever to everybody who's listening live on UK Health Radio. We appreciate Johan and his entire team giving us this live platform. I would recommend that you have a listen to the other presenters on UK Health Radio. It's a fantastic station and there's lots of great presenters doing some awesome things. Thank you also if you're listening after the fact, whether you're listening on our podcast channels, we're on all of the major ones, or if you're watching this on YouTube, either the long form of the show, or if you're watching any of the sliced and diced versions of the show, the channel is Health Tech Hour. And if you're following me on Instagram, it's at Steve Roost. And in my bio, you can find the links to the shows. I would also say, as I say every single week, all of the shows from UK Health Radio are on all of the podcast channels now. So you can either find us by going to the Health Tech Hour channel, or you can go to the UK Health Radio channel, and there you'll find all of the shows from all of the presenters. So let's get on to the show. Last week's show was actually a really, really interesting deep dive into the area of open source technology and the tension between software democracy and big enterprise. Really focused on this area of how can open source be used by the NHS to enable more innovation, to solve issues like electronic patient records, to solve some of these major foundational issues, or should the NHS continue on to invest in big enterprise off-the-shelf solutions because open source is too much of a security risk? Really interesting discussion. And Richard from Answer Digital and Joel from Interneuron were excellent guests. So I would recommend anyone that wants to listen to that, go have a listen. You can geek out on the technology. It was a really great show. On to today's show, we have actually kind of a continuation of a theme, really. So we have Rachel Fox, who's Executive VP for Altera Digital, who is an expert in clinically led electronic patient records in use across the NHS. Rachel, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm great, thank you. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Very, very well. So I will, there's a lot to unpack here. So we'll kind of go step by step. So what we like to do, I think in the initial instance, sometimes when we've got people on the show, is it would be great if you could just give us a little bit of your journey about how you ended up where you are right now, which is Executive VP of Altera Digital, and then a little bit of info about who Altera are. And I think why it matters to the people that are listening, if that makes sense. Like, why does this area matter to everybody? Or why should it matter? Like, why should people actually care about this?
Sure. So that's great. Thank you very much. And thanks for welcoming me to the show. I really feel honoured to be part of the show. And it's just a really great opportunity to explain more about Altera Digital Health. So my journey. So I started my career in the NHS at one of our customers. And I was there for 19 years doing many, many different roles within the NHS. I did an operational role. I did project management role, program management, and then my last role was innovation and in healthcare. And then I moved to Allscripts at the time, which is was acquired by Harris and created into Altera Digital Health. And so I started here at Altera as a salesperson. I was what was called like an AOE, an account manager, and I had a number of NHS customers. And I felt like for me, having that real background of NHS experience and understanding how the NHS operates made it really good for me as an expert to come into an organisation such as Altera Digital Health, because I believe I've got so much to give, so much knowledge and expertise. And it's really important that we have people within the NHS that are also helping with some of these tech companies, because it's really understand what is needed to drive improvements within the NHS. So I started as an AOE, and then I was promoted to director, then promoted again to area vice president. Mm. Then I implemented the client success program, which is really a huge benefit to all our NHS customers, because it really focuses on the NHS and it focuses on doing the right thing for the customers. And so implementing that in the UK, and that was such a success, we then implemented it into international. So I then was vice president of client success across the whole of international, so Singapore, Australia, UK, Canada. And that did that for quite a while. Once I did that, that was successful and set that up, I was then promoted to executive vice president. And here I am today, and I'm 12 months into the role now.
Okay. And congratulations. Very well deserved. What would be really helpful, I think, is that what is it that Altera Digital does, and why in the background, when you said it bought Allscripts, like why did it actually buy that company?
Okay, so Altera is the provider of an electronic patient record. So for people who are not sure what one of those are, it's a solution that in the old days you used to have a paper set of case notes. Those case notes would be then really difficult to find. Paper would get lost. You know, there's lots of inefficiencies within the NHS due to paper. And so an electronic patient record is to enable, you know, patients to be cared for in different multiple locations within a hospital, but the information is shared across the hospital. So it's accessed from any area within the hospital, and it's to improve patient care and able to find the information at the right time in the right place. And so why did Allscripts get bought by Harris? So Harris is a company that acquires, businesses, and they've got 100,000 customers. They've got 12,000 employees. They do around 200,000 acquisitions, and we've got like 200 offices across. Oh, wow. So it's a massive company, and they are owned by Constellation. So again, another acquisition company. And so why did Allscripts was up for sale, and Altera was made from Allscripts. And
okay,
for me, you know, Harris is a really, you know, good company to be able to So it's our forever home. That's what Altera Digital Health is, is now part
Okay.
of Harris's forever home.
Oh, that's nice. That's a nice phrase. So what was it like? What prompted your decision to leave the NHS and go into the private world?
Well, I felt like it was important that we had NHS people in the private world. In my old role when I was in the NHS, I implemented Allscripts EPR, which is now the EPR solution that we have in many hospitals in the UK and across the world. And so I felt like I could give something back, not just to the hospital I worked for, but also other hospitals. And really, it's about making sure patients are cared for appropriately, properly. And because that's really the importance here is making sure healthcare is safe and patients are treated correctly with the right level of care. So I felt that I was giving something back to the NHS.
Okay, and when you were at the NHS, and there was this transition from paper into electronic patient records.
Yeah.
At the beginning, that must have been pretty dicey and quite hard. What was that like?
Really, really hard. And one of the things I didn't realize was when I was doing the project and I was implementing the EPR, it was unbelievably shocking that had the amount of people that didn't know how to use a computer. And I found that was the hardest thing to really train the thousands of people that would be touching this NHS EPR. And therefore, we had to actually just give everybody a basic training on how to actually use a computer, which it was just a big shock for me. And then obviously making sure that all the processes are all documented, really understanding how the NHS works in every single ward, in every single department, making sure all the documents that were on paper are now available within electronically. It was a huge task to do. But actually it was the best experience I've ever had.
Yeah. I mean, were there people at the time that were actually saying, no, we shouldn't do this?
Yeah.
Or was everyone kind of up? Were there people that like, no, we should stick with paper?
Yeah. And people love paper. Paper will never go away, but people always want to revert back to paper. And so everybody loves their own document that they've created. And there was no standardization. There was just everybody, bits of paper everywhere and stuff was getting lost. It was just a real difficult to try and really understand a true health of a patient because there was missing documentation all over. So, but people did love paper and still do.
So I think that's really interesting. So, because there's going to be a lot of people listening. Well, I think now in the world that we live in, there's just a bit of an expectation that things will be digital. Sort of it's like the baseline expectation. So could you paint a picture of what it was like when the record was paper in a hospital, like all of those different stories you just threw out, like what does that mean? So there was like a literal physical file.
Yes,
that
correct.
Moved around from different places, or what happened?
And you had people running around with trolleys, not like you would go to the supermarket. Supermarket trolleys piled and piled high with case notes. You'd have a storage areas all over the trust, with lots and lots of paper records everywhere. You couldn't find anything. We had results scattered all over. Nobody. Because you had to stick them in the results. It was just a nightmare. And so when we tried to digitize the paper, we had to dismantle each of the case notes and scan them in. We ended up in a whole massive scanning bureau. It was a huge mammoth task to move from paper to electronic. And so it's not about scanning paper records. It's about creating the record
digital.
In electronic.
Yeah, because you had to scan them in the first place to get to Basecamp.
Correct, correct. And,
and then you can build.
You can build on it. Yeah, yeah. So
Was there just a lot more? Because I look at the clinical risk assessment and the clinical risk that we have now and how people view it. And it surely with that paper-based thing, there was just a lot of risk floating around the system.
Yeah, yeah.
And were people okay with that? Or is it known, or it was just sort of one of the, it's just the way the system worked. So that's it.
Yeah. That's all we ever knew. That's all we ever knew in the NHS was it was always paper. Paper was how everything operated. And when there was a set of case notes missing, how we treated patients. I mean, we wrote temporary case notes and we'd rely on the patient telling us their history. You know,
Right.
it's a huge amount of risk. Yeah. Where now
Wow.
having electronic patient record, you have the information right at your fingertips, you know, at any department, anywhere, at any time. You can have it on site, off site. There is so much versatility to being able to treat a patient a lot, you know, more improved because of the having the access to the data at the fingertips.
Okay. So this one's going to take a while, this next section. So we're going to stop for a break in about 5 minutes. So we'll split this one up over the break. But there's been some, I guess, controversy's a little harsh, but it's been a long journey, hasn't it, to get to an electronic patient record.
Yes.
And what why has well, I don't know the details because it's not necessarily my area. So I apologize if I don't know all the details. It just strikes me that sort of culturally there's a feeling that we've been trying to do this for a while, and maybe we've got here, maybe we've not. So what's the sort of history of it? Because there's definitely been some missteps along the way, haven't there?
So for me, when I implemented our EPR at one of our customer sites, that was 10 years ago. So, you know, we've been implementing EPRs for at least 10 years that
Okay.
I know of. And the hospital that I worked at was the most digitally mature hospital using the EPR that we have and still have today. And that's, you know, we're always improving it. And that made, you know, they were as part of the GDE program. And you know the Global Exemplar program that is, and they were you know one of the digitally mature trusts in the country. And so EPRs has been around for a while, a long time. But the journey to get to where we are with 90% of trusts now live with or have an EPR,
Is it
90,
90%?
yeah, 90, yeah. So there's 10% remaining now to have an EPR, and that should be you know the deadline is March 2026.
Okay. And when you say the trust, is this an EPR in a hospital setting, or is this an EPR across the entire system?
It's an EPR across an entire trust of hospitals. So
Trust
it
of hospitals.
yeah.
Right. So it's when someone goes into a hospital, they're able to access. Does it access their GP record as well, or is it just what happens in the hospital?
No, just what happens in the hospital, but you can integrate with the GP system as well. Yeah.
And what's that kind of and that so that in my experience of running PocDoc and interacting with predominantly primary care, to be honest, there's been a few instances where people have mentioned that the primary care system and I guess the secondary care system, which is what the hospital, well, not all hospital, it's all hospital care, secondary care, because some of it isn't, some of it's acute, right?
Correct, correct,
Okay.
yes.
But there's been people saying that the primary care system and the secondary care system don't interact. Is that kind of what we're, is that part of what we're talking about?
Exactly. And also acute as well. So there is, you know, we're trying to, a lot of the EPR vendors are trying to integrate the whole. So, you know, the economy of scale for data sharing between the acute, secondary care, and primary care. Yeah. So
And
there's a.
why have we ended up in that situation, do you think, where they're sort of separate? Is it just like because of the way that the system operates?
Well, there's different solutions for different, you know, areas of the system, really, and so it's about integrating them to make one patient record across the board.
And I'm guessing the fact that maybe that in primary care there's a number of very well embedded
Oh yeah.
enterprise solutions already.
Yes.
That they're like, well, why would we work? Why would we give up what we've got to help you over here? So you end up in this kind of commercial sort of quagmire.
Yeah.
Is that
Yeah.
fair?
Yeah, absolutely. And the you know there's only a small number of primary care solutions out there, you know what I mean? It's you know
There's only
quite
two or
duopoly
three, right?
there. Yeah, there's a duopoly in that space, yeah.
Yeah, there's a duopoly, right? So why would they help you guys?
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. So why? Let's go back to one of the original questions that I asked. Why should people care about this fundamentally? Like, why is this not, why is this whole electronic patient record not just like boring IT that no one cares about? I'm being deliberately provocative. I care about it. We all care about it. I'm just kind of giving you an opportunity because we're a broad church on the show. So I like to try and make it very clear to everyone why people should care about certain things.
Well, because it improves patient care, it improves patient health, it enables you to, you know, at hospitals to have the visibility of patient records, it enables, you know, that a more flexible approach across the whole healthcare setting. So it really is, it's about patients first, about making sure that there's benefits and outcomes using technology to improve patient care. And it's all about the patients, you know, and Altair Digital Health, we are focused on outcomes for patients.
So how does it improve patient health by definition, by just in and of itself?
Having the visibility of the patient information at the point of care is really important, making sure that, you know, there's clinical decision support within the electronic patient record to make sure that the decisions are being made, the right prescriptions are being given, the right tests are being ordered, the right scans are being available. And it's about having that all that information in one place to then enable the clinicians, because it's ultimately the clinicians who are providing the care, but having all that information at the point of care to make sure that the patient is being treated in line with the best outcomes possible for that patient.
Okay, we'll pick this up after the break. So we're going to stop for 2 minutes for the first commercial break. Thank you very much to Rachel Fox from Altair Digital, who's my guest on today's show. We will be back in 2 minutes.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Hello and welcome back to this week's Health Tech Hour with your host, me, Steve Roost, and my guest, Rachel Fox, who is the Executive Vice President at Altair Digital, who are leaders in the clinical electronic patient record space. So before the break, we were digging into exactly why people listening should care, what we should all care, whether we're listening or not, about the electronic patient record and how it improves care. So I'd like to just pick up on one thing that you said. You said within your solution, the doctor gets, or the doctor or nurse or whoever, the healthcare professional using it can access clinical decision support.
Yes.
Could you elaborate a little bit on that? Because I think that's kind of interesting as a thread.
Yeah. So it enables the clinicians to make the decisions. So it gives them the advice and guidance. So say, for instance, if we are, you know, prescribing a medication and there's another medication that doesn't interact well with that medication, it will alert to say to the clinician, you know, the advice is not to prescribe that medication with that. And that just helps save lots of, you know, drug prescription errors. You know, one of our hospitals in the UK, they have been able to massively reduce their drug errors using closed loop medication by 55% because of the, you know, the system has alerted and been able to stop clinicians advised clinicians not to produce or prescribe drugs.
Okay, so in that instance, right, there's a patient and the clinician's there and the clinician's looking at the patient, has made their diagnosis and says, right, I want to prescribe this drug. Mm-hmm. Do they have to put that in somehow through your tool when they do it to and then it then what queries their existing record to then say, oh, don't do that?
Yeah, correct. So yeah, they'll electronically prescribe, you know, a specific drug in the system. Okay. That will then alert to say, oh, this patient's already on this and a separate medication, or this medication doesn't interact well with that medication, and so it will alert the clinician. Now the clinician can override it if there's a need for it. You know, it's the decision is down to the clinician always, but it will give that support, and that's why it's called clinician support, is because it gives that support to the clinician to alert any issues that the system can identify.
Okay, and are there other instances where that decision support stuff kind of kicks in? Or is it just in prescription?
No, lots of different areas. You know, it depends how you configure the system up to what is important. So every hospital has their own workflows, their own configuration. And so the hospital has that ability to create the configuration in line with their best practices, their workflows. And that's the beauty of Altera Digital Health. The Sunrise solution is it's so configurable. You configure it to how you want it to work. So it depends on what each individual hospital wants their decision support to be, you know, to mean what do they want alerting, what do they want the system to provide the guidance and support with.
And just as a kind of scale, so for all of us, how many workflows, or how would you kind of try and quantify or explain the sheer scale of complexity that is involved in delivering a system like this that's massively configurable down to the nth degree in a highly complex system like a large hospital?
Yeah,
because that must be so many different workflows, pathways, things to figure out. Like how can you kind of like give it to us in layman's terms?
Yeah, so as part of the implementation, we do, like, you know, look at what the current state today. So at each trust, you know, when we're just about to go live within a customer, we will sit down and work through those workflows with the customer to help really document all what the workflows are at the moment. And then we then look to configure those workflows, you know, within the system. Now, it depends on, you know, the way that our system works is we can do, you know, a phased implementation, and so you can get the benefits so much quicker to the NHS than doing a big bang large implementation, which could take years and years, 2 years, 3 years to actually implement. Whereas with us, we will do the implementation and a phased approach. So if for instance the hospital wants to go live with clinical documentation as their first area, we will sit with them and we'll walk through each of their workflows, identifying where there's, you know, they can be streamlined, because you don't just make workflows from paper to electronic. You actually make those lean workflows. You make sure that they're delivering the benefits you want. So you don't just change paper to electronic, but you also do that workflow mapping piece of work with every single workflow to make sure that, you know, there is no workflows that are missed.
And what are the biggest risks in this electronic, like not speaking for Altera Digital, more just broadly, what are the things that like that keep you up at night about things? You know, more, or I guess where am I trying to get to? Nothing's perfect, right? So whereas paper, obviously, nightmare. Totally understand. Lots of problems.
Yeah.
Different problem set here. I mean, is it more around like if you're going to run anything digitally, then they need to have really, really robust Wi-Fi connectivity on their side, you know, and so on and so on, and backups and disaster recovery, and like what are the things here that create risk that need to get mitigated?
Yeah, so that's the big one for me. I think that's the worry for me, is not having the electronic patient record at the point, you know. So if there's a power cut, if there's a, you know, system failure, you know, within the trust side, you know, because all our applications are, you know, is hosted by each customer. And so if the customer doesn't have, you know, access, you know, it's then how do you access the patient record? And that's the biggest thing that keeps me up at night, is making sure we have the team available to support our customers when there is an issue like that. So when there is system downtime because, you know, the data centers overheated or any other instance, you know, we are there to support the customer. And we have also a business continuity solution that we can provide to our customers. So therefore, if there is an instance of downtime, there's always access to the data, so then they continue to treat the patients. But yeah, that is a big risk.
And what are the sort of biggest differentiators in this electronic patient record space? Like, because there are other companies and things like that, but like, I'm not, you know, not looking to get into a competitive thing, but just what you could think about it from the perspective of a trust, if you like, or one of your customers. Yeah. What are the biggest things that are most important to them about how do they make these decisions around, I'll go with you, I won't go with you, I'll do this, do that? Because I feel like in this space, maybe for people listening, and maybe that's unfair, but partly for me, is sort of there's such an expectation that an electronic patient record just exists, mm-hmm. you know? Just it just should be that way from the punter's perspective. I think that glosses over a huge amount of the complexity and like the decision-making criteria that go into actually how you choose the provider, how you implement it, all that kind of stuff. So can you shed any light on how they think about this, how your customers think about it?
So, you know, we've got a set of our customers that love our alternative approach. And the alternative approach that we have at Alter Digital Health is the fact that we have a modular and configurable, scalable system. And so that means that, you know, you can go live in a specific area, start seeing the benefits sooner, and then you can start implementing it as a phased approach. And that really is the benefit of our solution versus our competitors, is because it's so flexible and it's so adaptable. And the phased implementation just makes it easier for the trust to adopt. If you can imagine, you might have 7,000, you know, members of staff in an organization trying to train them all up, trying to get them all using the system. In one big bang, taking everything away and implementing something brand new. And, you know, it's a massive, massive change. Whereas with us, we do it in such a way that makes it so much easier to digest. You don't rip things out. You know, we don't do a rip and replace module. So the way we work is you've already invested in the solutions you've bought. Don't rip them out. Sweat the asset. Make the best of what you've bought and then wrap these clinical solution round the solutions you've bought. That then you can save money, you know, because you're not taking something out. You're also getting the benefits sooner because you're only implementing it in the areas, you know, in a phased approach that you need to start receiving the benefits in an implementation plan. But also it gives the users the ability to learn and work with the system rather than it being a massive big bang that which creates so much stress and anxiety and ultimately, you know, it can impact patient care.
I completely agree. And also, is there, so some of the others in the space are more of a rip everything out, it's all in one, or it's us or nothing across the board sort of thing.
Correct. Okay. And that's massively risky and really hurts an NHS organisation, because just to rip something out, you know, and replace it with something, it can take 2 years to start to do that.
Well, and also the risk associated with doing that is enormous.
Oh, massive, massive. Right. You know, yeah. You can imagine how difficult that would be, not only to the users, but, you know, to patient data, patient's health, you know, ripping something out, everything that you've already invested in, the money that's already been spent, and then ripping it out and replacing it with something else that no one knows how to use.
Are those deals still getting done like that in this era of sort of cost savings? And they're still going through?
Yeah, massively. Wow. And the amount of money some of these are is eye-watering. They're huge amounts of money. Yeah.
So I think this is where we got to last week with Joel and with Richard. And they were, I don't know if you've come across Arts Digital or Interneuron, but Interneuron's got this kind of cool, it's not an electronic patient record necessarily. It's called an MCR, an open-sourced MCR. Anyway, they were big proponents of open source, and they're sort of, one of the things that they talked about was this big enterprise all-in-one off-the-shelf investment, which could be hundreds of millions of pounds.
Hundreds of millions,
easily. And but basically what you're doing is paying a huge business that needs your data in order to operate, and then you're sort of outsourcing it, as opposed to trying to sweat the asset, if you like, of your data, which is like an EPR company needs access to your patient records to have a business. Mm-hmm. So why not use that in a more clever, democratic, you know, adaptable, flexible way, right? I think that's kind of where you're coming at it from, isn't it?
Yeah, and the thing is, though, the solution is up to the trust. So they implement it how they want. The data is their data. We provide the solution to as an aid, as a to help them with their patient care. It's their data. They do what they wish with their data. It's their solution. But we help them configure it to get the best out of it, to get the best outcomes for the patient. So really, the ability of our system versus our competitors is that flexibility and be able to configure it in line with what the hospital wants, not being mandated to follow a specific workflow because
Yeah,
in
I
the
don't know about I don't know more I don't know enough about this space, obviously, but I just can't imagine what I know about healthcare professionals that they enjoy working with those big enterprise systems.
No, not.
But I don't know, maybe someone must like them, because they if you're saying deals are still getting done, then there must be somebody that still wants to do that. I don't know.
At the moment, there's a number of the competitors out in the market, and I'm not saying we don't need competitors because we all need competitors. Competitors,
Sure.
it benefits the NHS, but for us, with an Altera Digital Health, we just do a different approach than our competitors, which I think that's really where we should be focusing on patient outcomes. Making sure that we're delivering against the frontline digitization program, and just really saving the NHS money by being affordable. The NHS money,
Yeah.
NHS at the moment is so cash strapped. It is so, there's so many financial challenges. To allowing to them to spend all this huge amounts, eye-watering amounts of money on these other EPRs that make you rip and replace everything and mandate you take their workflows. Whereas with us, we support the NHS, we provide them with the tools and give them the system to help them, implement in line with their workflows for patient care.
Yeah, I mean, look, it makes a lot of sense to me. Obviously, I'm not in the product details, but what is it that they are, what makes them go with a rip and replace versus your solution? Because on the face of it, your solution sounds a lot more practical, affordable, sensible, flexible, adaptable. So what is it that draws them to those bigger deals?
I think it's just, I don't know, because I've never actually had to buy one of those big products. So
Right.
I've actually been in the space whereby, I've experienced the reasons why. But people buy things because they buy a dream, they buy a vision.
Right.
Whether that actually comes to fruition, I don't know. I've not actually been in a space where those EPR providers or I've spoken to anybody who works with that solution or those solutions, but for me, I think it's they're buying a dream, a vision.
And what you mentioned the misprescribing rate went down by like 55%. What other case studies or stats do you have around the patient outcome, the health outcomes?
Yeah, absolutely.
Go for it. Hit us with a few. I'd love to hear.
Yeah, some of our hospitals are even like when we talked about paper, 99 to 100% paper-free. That's a huge.
Wow.
We go from being a fully paper-based system, risk of losing paper, risk of losing it, vital information that supports patient care. Some of our trusts have achieved 25% nursing time saved just by
Wow.
having to look for paper. Everything's all in the same place. We've even been able to reduce 19% reduced length of stay in hospitals, getting patients out of the hospital to stop bed
Wait,
flooding.
hold on. So the EPR helps people get out because it makes it easier to discharge them.
Correct, correct.
How's that?
Well, it's because you can prescribe medication and prescriptions from the system. You're not waiting for somebody to run to the pharmacy to go and get,
Okay.
And you can do planned discharges. You can discharge patients, in the, for the future, so you can start doing the discharge process earlier. You can
Right.
actually look at where all you, and we've got a solution called Patient Flow, and that's a patient flow solution. Can then look at where patients are in a hospital setting and help move that blocker within, move patients outside, out of ED, into beds, and get people out of beds into the community. So that whole process enables a quicker reduction in length of stay and get people out of the hospital quicker.
That makes a huge amount of sense. Like, it's really interesting to, and I think this is what I was trying to get at earlier in the show, where this matters because this, although people think it, I think some people have the perception that it's like, oh yeah, it's like, sure, there's a patient record and it's on the computer, and sure, it actually has these real practical clinical values that really tie in with the NHS's priorities at the moment: reduce the backlog, improve efficiency, net zero, you know, patient safety, reduce risk of misprescribing. So it's almost like it's a much more active tool than just this like repository of people's information.
It is absolutely, you know, even down to, you know, improving patient care, you know, by having all the information. But also, you know, one of our trusts has said that for every pound they've invested, they've been able to save £10, you know what I mean, which
Wow.
is a lot of money to save an organization. So it's
That's
not,
massive.
yeah, massive. It's massive, you know, and those are the benefits. So, you know, not just the clinical benefits, but also the benefits to the hospital financially. You know, one of our hospitals is in the top five of ED performance, you know, A&E performance, because of using our solution in their accident and emergency department. So, you know, there's so many benefits, you know.
And how much of those stats do you think is attributable to just a shift away from paper versus the actual Altera product being really awesome?
Yeah, and I think it's part and parcel. You know, there's obviously part of it is relating to moving from paper, but also having the configurability of our system means that the solution can be used in line with how the customer wants it to work, and therefore fits with their trust workflows. And so I think Altera Digital Health EPR really does play a massive part in that, because like I said, ED performance is, you know, it's all measured, it's all reported, and one of our customers is in the top five. And so it's really important that not only does our solution provide the guidance and the support and the, you know, accessibility to patient information, but also supports the workflows to improve patient care.
Cool. Well, look, on that note, we're going to go for our last commercial break. So we will be back in 2 minutes with my guest, Rachel Fox, Executive Vice President for Altera Digital. We'll be right back.
The station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Hello, and welcome back to the last section of this week's show, this week's Health Tech Hour, with me, Steve Roost, CEO and co-founder of PocDoc, and my guest, Rachel Fox, who is the Executive Vice President of Altera Digital. So, I think I want to kind of switch it up now, because you mentioned in the intro that you've worked in a lot of other different countries across the world. So how does their approach to this electronic patient record differ based on those systems? What are the kind of differences and things that you've seen?
And to be honest, well, because it's only in the international space that I've actually worked. So, you know, in Singapore and Australia, they're quite the, you know, the processes are very similar to ours, in the UK, you know. So really, I don't see there's a huge amount of differences. You know, the EPR, our EPR is like I said, so configurable. It really fits in line with whichever region you're implementing the solution in, you know, because the workflows are really down to how the individual hospital operates. And so, you know, we're not mandating people follow a certain workflow. You know, we don't come in and say, you know, you're going to have to rip all your workflows out and implement ours. You know, we really do focus on how the hospital operates, and then our solution fits in with that hospital.
Okay, and how what was I going to say? How, but people moan about the NHS all the time and say how rubbish it is, but how it, you know, you know, like how does it compare, or in your experience having to deal with other systems? And it sounds like you've dealt with a lot of other different systems.
Yeah. And to be honest, I disagree that the NHS, you know, I mean, I love the NHS. I'm literally, if you cut me in half, I do have NHS written through me like a stick of rock.
Like a stick of rock, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I am in NHS through and through. And, you know, one thing that I do want to mention is 40% of our Alterra Digital Health employees are ex-NHS.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, because we all really understand the pressures within the NHS. We understand all what the NHS needs. And so being able to communicate with the NHS staff and really understand the challenges. There are challenges in the NHS, but there isn't challenges in every business, you know. And so it's really important that we as healthcare providers provide software and solutions that meet the needs for healthcare you know, providers such as the NHS or, you know, Singapore or Australia. Because if you're mandating a hospital to follow your processes, then it's not really beneficial to the hospital that you're providing it to.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, so I've spoken to a couple of people on the show that actually have said that, like, I mean, look, we work with the NHS. We love the NHS. I also love the NHS. That there's a few people that have said that actually when you go abroad and you look at some of these other systems, that's when you realize that actually the NHS is kind of amazing in some ways. Not perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but it's a little bit like, well, be careful what you wish for.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, you can, in the US, it's all private, you know, and whereas we should appreciate what we've got. I mean, the NHS is amazing, you know, 75 years of the NHS is just amazing. And so we should really be thankful for what we've got. You know, the doctors and nurses work extremely hard to provide that level of care to all, you know, all our loved ones. And it's really important that as healthcare suppliers, we provide software that meets the needs for the clinicians and the patients, you know, and, you know, without, if, you know, what we need to do is make sure we don't hinder, you know, healthcare.
Yeah.
We need to be there to support and make healthcare better. And therefore, I think that Alterra Digital Health has the right solutions to be able to provide better healthcare, to help provide better healthcare to our patients.
So what's the kind of next step or the vision around what's next in EPR? The world of it, like, for example, are you going to be able to start using AI to analyze the data to yield better clinical decisions, or tap into the population health management sector, or like what's the evolution of it? Because at some point it does become a commodity, right? Like it's everywhere, and you know, you can argue about my record's better than your record and things like that, but where's this going?
And I think so. AI is a big topic at the moment, and as you can imagine, I think every EPR provider is also, you know, working on their AI plan. But you know, there's lots of, you know, people now getting a little bit nervous about AI. You know, how can AI be used positively? You know, but the decision still needs to be with the clinician, and so that's really where I think, you know, people's views are slightly, you know, on the fence really, as to is AI going to be the you know, the thing that's going to fix it all, or is this going to be another enabler, or is it you know I look at LinkedIn quite regularly and see all different people's opinions on AI. And I do think AI has a place, absolutely, but I still think that the decision still falls with the human, the person that is treating the patient. You know, technology is there to be an enabler. And therefore, but clinicians are there they've been to medical school. They have all the, you know, all the certificates. They have all the knowledge and experience. So I think AI is definitely something that everyone should be focusing on and how it can benefit. But I don't think it's the total end goal.
No, I think, you know, within the clinical, the actual final clinical decision will be like the last piece of the puzzle. If ever,
you know,
if ever, I was just wondering more, like, because a lot of the use cases and case studies and benefits that you spoke about were quite almost like workflow related, efficiency related. Like, I just wonder whether there's a role for it in any of that to kind of supercharge that. but I don't know.
Predictability is a good place. We should be able to use AI, you know, so using, looking at the data to identify if there's trends within populations and really focus on how to prevent, you know, illnesses rather than be reactive and be, you know, like the whole smoking and, you know, yeah, trying to stop populations from becoming ill. Is a way that we should be focusing all our energies is you know, the preventative medicine, you know, mm, rather than just being reactive on treating patients when they become ill. And I think that's, yeah, the biggest focus, you know, having real an understanding of, you know, making sure we're putting all the measures in place to prevent illness in the first place, I think is really what we should be aiming for.
And how does that overlap with the EPR and what you guys do? Like, how does, because by the time they're in an hospital,
yeah,
one could argue that their sub patient is somewhat further down the pathway.
Yeah, and it's about having understanding the data. So, you know, it's that data analysis as part of maybe AI or, you know, more of a population and the healthcare population view, really. Mm. Be so, where is the starting point of an illness, and then really looking at it from a large scale population assessment.
Okay. And with, so in the other countries that you've worked in, so I was thinking that one of the next big frontiers for the NHS, don't know if it applies elsewhere, but that's kind of my question, is to actually crack the primary care, secondary care systems talking to each other.
Yes.
Because I think that if you do that, that really feeds into what you just talked about, which is the prevention agenda. And the prevention agenda is obviously where PocDoc, where we spend a lot of our time in cardio, metabolic and renal health. I care a lot about it personally. And so I think if you can actually do that bit of it, because a lot of, for example, the cardiology clinics, the lipid clinics, the diabetes clinics, they all sit within secondary care a lot, yes, of the time. And there's a lot of inefficiency between those two systems around, has the person had the right blood test? Have they had their risk assessment done? Have they had this in order prior to being able to be treated and things like that? So that's what we've been finding. So I wonder whether that's the next big, like, frontier to crack. It would be really hard because of the duopoly, I think, in primary care.
Yeah, I agree. I mean,
there's no, it would have to be like, what, like a mandate from the government or some kind of legislative structure.
Yeah, to share the data across the whole economy, yeah.
Because I can't see them doing it voluntarily. But presumably you wouldn't have an issue. Do you guys have an issue sharing with them?
No, not at all. No, not at all. So we share our, you know, so as soon as the patient leaves hospital, the discharge summary will be sent to the, you know, the GP.
So
the
oh, right, so you already do that anyway.
We already share the data, but I think it's generally, you know, it's about sharing all the data, not just specific parts of it, you know, and I think that's where the biggest emphasis needs to be right now is to focus on sharing the data across the whole setting.
Yeah, it doesn't really make, I mean, I can understand why from their businesses, they sort of feel like maybe there's some commercial threat there or something, right? But then they only feel that way maybe because they view it as almost like their data, and it kind of isn't.
No.
Their data. No. You know, they've done an amazing job at building systems that help primary care operate really efficiently, really high level, and credit to them for that, you know, like massively. But the actual record in and of itself is not in their purview.
No, and I think sharing of the data just will enable patient care to be improved. I think that is the
yeah point. Definitely,
absolutely.
Like, you know, if you're running like a lipid clinic, which is where we kind of came across it, like one of the instances where we've been working is where there's a lipid clinic, the cardiologist or the lipid epidemiologist, whoever's running the clinic, can't see those people unless they've had an up-to-date lipid panel done.
Yeah,
and there are people showing up, partly sometimes they don't know.
Yeah.
Then they can't find out because the patient doesn't have it. They don't know. They can't get hold of the GP, or yeah, the patient genuinely hasn't had one done because it just didn't flow through into the primary care system, yeah, around to book in the phlebotomy and to do the testing to make sure it was done in time for the lipid clinic. Yeah. So the person's shown up, travel time off work, so on. Yeah. And the lipid epidemiologist or cardiologist has just had a 15-minute, 20-minute appointment just wasted.
Yeah, and that happens across the whole setting, you know.
Yeah, in all areas, I assume.
Yeah, there's so much, savings that can be made from, process savings and money and time. There's so many savings across the board that can come from just having that joined up, data across the whole healthcare setting is definitely, a benefit that needs to be addressed.
Great. And just before we go, what advice would you give to anyone who's currently working in the NHS, who's thinking about going out into the sort of private market? Because it sounds like it's worked out for you, and it sounds like it's worked out for sort of 30 to 40% of Altera staff. So yeah. What would your advice be?
As in a customer, or are you talking?
No, someone like you that after a while working in the system is sure. Thinking, what would you say to someone?
I'm on the I've got two sides really, because for somebody who works in the NHS wanting to come out of the NHS, absolutely, find EPR vendors who you can make a difference. You can influence, you can provide guidance and acknowledgement. But one of the things I'm really, I don't want is people leaving the NHS. NHS needs, the staff they've got, they really need the experts that are in the field. So I'm not out for taking staff away from the NHS. There has to be a balance to make sure that, we're not taking, EPR vendors are not taking people out of the NHS. Mm. If someone wants to leave, it's a different matter. But, I wouldn't want, the NHS is struggling with staff, vacancies and keeping their, staff. But I wouldn't want people to be, poached out of the NHS.
No, that makes total sense. It was more of an encouragement or advice, but totally understand. On that note, Rachel, we come to the end of the show. But it was brilliant to have you on. Thank you so much for coming. Thanks for your energy and for giving us me and the listeners a real deep dive into this and a lively dive into this space. So thank you very much for coming on.
No problem. Thanks for inviting me. I've really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Good. And thanks to everyone for listening. We'll be back again next week. Thank you to the UK Health Radio team for running the production on this show. We'll be right back next week. Thank you.